Welcome back to another episode of The Cosmic Circle, the official podcast of The Cosmic Circus. On today's episode, we are having our annual Halloween Horror Fest, I guess you can say, where we are going to be discussing our favorite horror projects, we said from 2024, but as Vic will tell you, that we have to include the last part of 2023 because we recorded in Halloween, October, so like we have to give ourselves. So this is covering any Halloween horror projects, movies, film, television. I said film and movies together. It's two separate things. Books, we are covering it all. We're going to tell you our favorites, and I'm so excited to be here today. My name is Brian Kitson. I am, of course, the head writer of The Cosmic Circus, and joining me today, I have fellow writers Vic and John. How are we doing today?
Hello there. We're good.
Hey, it's good to be back.
We are. I know, John, this is kind of like the one that we have to have you on. I feel like this has been like the, from the first year we did it, granted it's only the second year, the name that always comes up is yours, because you are kind of like our horror connoisseur over at The Cosmic Circus.
I think I'm the only person at The Cosmic Circus that I like a little, like might have a small love for it. Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a few of, I love horror too, but you go to, what is it? Fantastic Fest, which is a lot of horror stuff, right?
I mean, it's a mixture. I mean, like, yeah, they have some good horror over there, but I mean, like, you also get like movies like, The Apprentice, which is, I guess qualifies as a horror if you think about it, but yeah.
I was going to say, that's the most horror film you've ever talked about.
Yeah, possibly. It is kind of scary considering the subject matter.
Truly. So thank you both for joining me today. And we're just going to jump right in. And I'm going to go ahead and start with you, Vic, okay? These are not in order, as we've talked about outside of the podcast. These are just our favorite projects. And you're kind of our video game man. So I'm excited to see what kind of video game, like horror, supernatural video games you have. So just lay it on me. What's that first project that you just want to mention or talk about?
So since you mentioned games, I'm just going to start with them. And I have two. So I have Alan Wake 2, which premiered right after we finished, a few days right after we finished recording. I've got a game before the premiere, but I finished it very close to the release date, and I really have to include it because it's not only one of the best games of 2023, but it's definitely one of my favorite games of a few years. And it's full of horror elements, full of Lovecraft Easter eggs, and okay, everything that's, you know, whenever you think about horror movies, horror projects, horror books, every theme from those projects that you may think of is in a bigger or in a smaller way included in Alan Wake 2. It's like a one big library of horror motifs that you can just put in one project, and you know, it's just a fun to discover it, and the whole game is, wow, it's such a wild roller coaster of not only horror motifs but life motifs as well, because you know, as a therapist yourself, you can, you know, if you one day have a chance to play in it, you can, you know, just depict this in every way possible, on motives, on people, mental problems, on, you know, trying to find difference between reality and your fantasy life, or whatever you think is true. And that's why Alan Wake 1, Alan Wake 2, and all the DLCs, especially the recent ones which were released this year, wow. I can't think of any better project to start with our list.
I was going to say, so I remember I read your review. I edited it back in the day, and I know nothing about Alan Wake, so I do apologize in advance, but like, there is like this, like you're going in and out of like almost like a television world kind of thing. Is that correct, or am I totally thinking of something else?
Okay, it's true in a way, because there's a real world and there's a world called The Dark Place where Alan Wake is held after the events from the first Alan Wake game. In the first Alan Wake game, you're playing as Alan Wake, who gets to, you know, who just goes on a vacation because he's a famous bestseller writer and just wants to, you know, just get vacation. And he's traveling with his wife, and at one point the reality starts to blend with fiction, and he realizes that part of his books are becoming a reality. And in the end, he
Okay.
ends in a in this place called the Dark Place, where he's sort of a puppet for a demon named Scratch, who uses him to rewrite the reality, you know, to get to the real world and try to rule it. But there's a time skip. I think it's 13 years between the first one and the second game, where we learn that Alan is still trapped there. But
Okay.
after chapter one or chapter two, I don't remember correctly now, he escapes. And it's wow. You can visit the dark place to revisit Alan's memories on how he escaped from the dark place to the real world, and there are parts of the television show, but they serve as a I don't know how I can name it without spoiling too much, but they serve as a sort of a story of how Alan Wake became who he is. And then you can learn more about what the dark place really is and who Scratch, the evil alter ego or the devil himself, truly is in this world. And there's a lot of, I don't know if you agree with me, if you ever played in it, and it's to the listeners, not you guys, but if you've played in it, then you can really feel that it's a game that really hits every single player. That you don't have to like horror games or horror projects at all, but this game will either get you interested in the topic, or it will make you hate horrors even more, but love this game even more, if you get
Sure,
it.
sure. Real quick, I just want to throw out a general spoiler warning. There are going to be things we're going to talk about in here, so like Vic, you don't have to hold yourself back if you want to talk about something, but if you do hear a topic that we're talking about and you want to skip it. Okay.
Okay.
That's to our listeners. If they want to skip it, don't want to be spoiled, but like this has been out for a year. It's okay if we spoil it a little bit. John, I'm going to jump to you now. I'm so excited for
Hey.
your list.
My first idol on my list is a small horror film called Oddity.
Oh, I've heard such good things of this film.
It is very surprising. So, the movie involves a disabled character, which, you know, I'm very fond of. It involves a blind woman who, her sister dies.
Okay.
And she's also one of those people that is very fond of the spiritual and hauntings and stuff like that, kind of like Ed and Lorraine Warren, but like
Okay.
in one character.
Okay.
And she wants to go visit the home where her sister died to figure out, because she is also a medium, wants to know if she could figure out if how it happened, like how her sister passed away. And
Okay.
the weird added element, oddity, is that she doesn't just bring herself. She brings a weird mannequin doll.
Okay. Like
Yeah.
a saw puppet thing?
No, like a life-size, horrifying looking mannequin thing.
Okay.
Like it's very, very scary looking.
Okay.
I don't know why anybody would keep this thing around. And the movie kind of plays with the ideas of mannequins, like, did it move? Did it not move? Is it, like, doing something? And, dude, it is a trip. This movie is a trip. It starts with the concept, with the almost kind of like a gimmick. And then it gets more twisty and more suspenseful. And by the end of it, like, it has a pretty surprising reveal.
Okay.
And very, like, it's got a great payoff. A great okay. payoff, which is something you look for in a horror film that's got a gimmick, right? Right. It's got great characters, a kind of an emotional story. I was very surprised by it because, you know, it's kind of like a good film critic said once, if you take out the horror elements, does the story still work?
Okay.
And I think if you take out all the horror stuff in this, it is a very captivating film. Story-wise, acting-wise, performance-wise, like, it's very good. That's my first title, and it is Oddity.
I never heard that statement before about a horror film or, like, a horror project, but I do love that. I love the idea of, like, take out the horror, is it still a good story? Because at the end of the day, that's what you still need, is a good story to get through a film.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, if you take out all the scares, does it still hold up? Is it good? Like, the writing, the acting, the cinematography, does it still work? And I think with a movie like this, it absolutely works.
I also just looked up this mannequin, and it is terrifying.
It is very terrifying. It is absolutely terrifying. And it is not something you want to keep around. Nope, never. Not at all.
Vic, I just put it in the chat if you want to see it, just because it is, it looks like something like from like the old Goosebumps show, which I used to be terrified of as a kid. That's just not, yeah.
It just looks like something that was took straight out of Supernatural.
Yeah, it's terrifying. That like that open mouth with the like dead eyes. No, thank you.
Just burnt corpse.
I feel a little bit like a basic bitch right now because my answers are so not as good as, like, you guys started off strong. And my first one on my list is Maxine, which is a good film. Did you see it?
I did, and I'm one of the defenders. Like, I know a lot of people did not like it. I actually enjoyed it, so I'm right there with you.
I will say this about the film. So I did not see any of the previous films until, like, the night before. And my friend was like, hey, I got a free ticket to see Maxine. Do you want to go tomorrow? And I was like, do I have to see their films? And she's like, probably not. And I was like, never mind. I'm going to binge these. And so I binged all three of them within 24 hours. And so to me, that kind of felt like a like an experience almost of just being like you're watching. I don't know. It like it felt cool to see them in that way. And I thought Maxine actually did a really good job of wrapping up the storyline. For those who haven't seen it, obviously, this is just about, this is a continuation of X and the prequel Pearl. That's not nearly as important, but in my defense, in my argument, is the best of the trilogy. But Maxine's just about a girl who's kind of getting stalked and by somebody who knows what she did in her past. And it's, to me, I liked that it was like that psychological thriller feel. I mean, John, would you classify it as like a psychological thriller? I want to say that it was. I'm gonna argue that. I guess it's more of like it has like a noir feel a little bit. But I did like it. I thought it was very impressive. It was good.
I'm so sorry. I couldn't unmute my microphone.
it's okay.
So the way that I felt about it, and I don't know if you're familiar with the writer. It's going to be kind of a left field comparison. Okay. But it kind of reminded me of the movies of who's the guy who directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
Oh, I'm gonna look it up real quick.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about though, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so to me, like
Shane Black.
It had a little bit of Shane Black in there. And a little bit of Shane Black. Like, there's two characters in the film, like, besides the Maxine character, and it's like a Michelle Monaghan. And I can't remember the other cop, but so there's like a weird detective side story going on throughout there, and there's a lot of humor in it. And Kevin Bacon is almost like the Joe Pesci from Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
Like he's so over the top and goofy and hamming it up. Like, I think it's kind of funny, but kind of funny in parts. It's not as good as the other two, but I still liked it. I thought it was fun. So yes. I'm right there with you on that.
I definitely agree. It's not as strong as the other two, but it was just like, I like that each movie in this trilogy had such a distinct feel, and I respected what they did, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Totally agree with you. And I think Mia Goth, man, she's just, I feel like her performance is not as strong in this one, but I can watch Mia Goth in like a 3-hour film, no matter what. She just knows how to bring it. Like, so yeah, I'm in full support of Maxine, Brian. I really
Thank
am.
You. Woo. Vic, give us another one. Lay number two on us.
Okay. So I'm just going to start my Nicolas Cage fan club right now. Long legs.
Do it. Okay, Long Legs. This is one, again, I have not seen, but everybody in my life has seen it, and they either love it or they hate it.
Okay, so I'm just going to say it. Alan Wake 2, but made as a movie without the license.
Okay.
Yeah, just basically this. Nicolas Cage plays Long Legs, who is a personification as a sort of a Satan, but he's a Satan believer who just tries to hurt children. Not gonna spoil for people who haven't seen it, because it's a really strong movie. Like, when I was watching it, I was terrified. Like, I just had this fear inside of me, and I really tried not to, you know, not to turn off my light.
Okay.
I don't know, I was just, it was really I was really uncomfortable while I was watching it. It was really, it was really uncomfortable, but long story short, it's set in 1994 Oregon. There's an FBI agent, Lee Harker, who tries to discover who killed this family, who kidnapped the daughter from this family, who killed other people, etc. And it all, you know, is about catching Long Legs. For the most part of the movie, they don't know who he is, how he looks like. But for people who haven't seen it, just imagine Nicolas Cage is looking like a guy who is barely alive. Like, he's a barely alive Ozzy Osbourne. So just Ozzy Osbourne. But he's covered in a white paint, but it looks like his skin is dehydrated. So he's like a walking corpse, basically, like a Satan in a rotten body, which kind of is, wow, it's such another great role from Nicolas Cage, where he looks like a how can I say it, where he looks like a unstable person where you don't have to think much about it when you look at him and you just know he's trouble. And it's a really strong movie, and you guys have to see it because it has a lot of Easter eggs to the classic horror projects, the classic horror motifs. It has a lot of plot twists, and it really, it really makes your brain go fuzzy when it finishes, when
I
it
was gonna say, I
ends.
think one of the interesting things from like the advertising aspect, and I don't know if either of you saw the commercial for this commercial, but it was the one with her heartbeat, where they actually like they're like, this is the actress's actual heartbeat seeing Nicolas Cage for the first time. And they never show you what he looks like in the commercial, but it's just her, like you see her reaction and you just hear her heartbeat going faster and faster and faster.
Oh, so you're talking about the little girl looking at a guy, no face.
No, it was the detective walks into the room
Oh,
and
okay.
sees him for the first time, and if they have her strapped to like a heart monitor to like get her heartbeats, and like that's all, they show nothing else in that commercial, and I was just like, I have to see this movie because it's just so wild. Like
The
that was just like a cool.
marketing is great. It was really
Yes.
good. Yeah, the marketing was very good. The one teaser I saw was like it was a fixed camera position, like in a room, and you can see what's going on in the other room, like people arguing or talking, and then all of a sudden, like a man comes in with an axe and starts hacking somebody up in the other room, and then it just says long legs. And I was like, I don't know what just happened, but I'm gonna watch it.
That was like their tactics were really cool. Like they took some wild shots with their marketing to get people to come in, and I think it probably worked in their
Yeah.
favor.
Yeah. But
Especially.
I'm gonna be honest, like horror is subjective, but Nicolas Cage did not work for me in that movie. He did not work for me.
Why not?
Because I thought it was too much Cage. Like I thought he went like an extra mile. Like I compared it in my review to like he like reminded me of Martha Stewart and Marilyn Manson combined, and which is terrifying. But like again, horror is subjective. What's scary for one person is not scary for another, and if it works for Vic, that's all that matters, you know. So it
Sure.
yeah, like I thought Paranormal Activity was scary. But there's some people who are not afraid of that.
I mean, that movie is terrifying in its own right.
Yeah.
But that's why I said I heard like there's some of my friends who loved Long Legs, and there were some people that walked out and thought that's not for me. So what, let me ask you this, Vic, what was it about it for you that was like, yes, was it just because it was Nicolas Cage, or was it just because, like, what was it about you that was like, this is the horror movie for me?
Well, basically, I know I'm just gonna say it again, but the whole vibe of Alan Wake
Sure.
that I
Yeah.
noticed in it, because there's too much similarities that I can, if people played in Alan Wake 2 and they're gonna watch Long Legs, they immediately gonna realize that there's too much similarities.
Okay.
And that's one thing, of course, Nicolas Cage, I love Nicolas Cage. Like, he's one of my
Oh.
favorite actors, and he's a definition of a great actor for me, because every great actor can make a bad movie better basically just because he's in it.
Okay.
And yeah. But horror motifs. Basically, the whole horror idea of a movie for me is horror movie doesn't have to have the jump scares, so much blood, and all that. It just have to terrify me. Like, I just have to feel very uncomfortable and have this thriller part of a movie resonate with me. And that's basically what makes a horror movie for me. And Longlegs achieved this. And I have to say that even music, the camera work, the cut between scenes, it's all it's really all working together, well, very well working together for me. And it gives a lot of climax to this whole idea of making the terrifying movie without showing you the whole bloodbath, without killing thousands of people, or just doing simple jump scares every 5, 10 minutes, just to, just to make your heart beat a lot faster.
Sure,
So yeah.
sure. All right, John, give me your second.
My second movie is kind of recent, and it is Smile 2.
Okay. Why?
Hi, guys, this movie is an absolute banger. I'm just gonna say it. I had so much fun with Smile 2. I again, kind of like you said, it might be a basic pick. It might be.
That's okay.
I feel like 85% of why I love this movie is Naomi Scott. Naomi
Okay.
Scott is incredible in Smile 2.
Yes.
So I don't know if Brian, did you watch it?
I did, and this is one of the ones on my list too.
Oh man, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
No. I'm so glad that somebody else liked it. I have to ask you, was it intentionally funny or was it unintentionally funny? Because it was, I loved the fact of the comedy and the horror that it blended so well together, but I don't know if that was intentional or not, or if that was just the audience I had.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's a little bit of both. Like there's one scene, and I'm sorry. Sorry.
You okay?
There's one sequence involving like dancers. Like my apologies to the audience. I'm gonna have to talk about it, but it's both terrifying and funny. The way it's presented, because of just how uncomfortable it is to have like 8 or 9 people just staring at you in the bedroom, like
Yes.
out of nowhere, you know what I'm saying? And
Yes.
there's something funny about it, but also legitimately terrifying. That's what I kind of liked about the movie is that it did. Like it brought new ideas that I never thought could be scary, kind of like that bedroom scene. Like, dude, backup dancers, why would backup dancers be a scary thing? Why would that be scary? And
Sure.
somehow the film makes it scary. But I really enjoyed Smile 2. It is. It kicks off immediately. Like that very first sequence, I'm not gonna say what happens, but
Oh my gosh, though. Yes.
it just starts and you can't breathe right away. And
Yeah.
then it goes into the title, and you get like about 10 minutes of like air, just a little bit of oxygen. And then it just goes right back into it and doesn't stop. I told Ben in our review on YouTube that before it started, me and other people at the theater we were all saying, "Hey, did you hear that this movie is 2 hours and 15 minutes?" And we were all frustrated. Like, we're gonna be here for that long? And when the movie ended, I was shook. I was like, that's it? That's all? That's everything? It goes by. It goes by so fast. It's so intense. I think it's a better film than number one, and
Yes.
a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. And Naomi Scott, oh man, she's so great in this. Anyway, that's my second pick. Smile too.
I'm gonna piggyback off this. I'll make this my second pick too. But yeah, I first off, I didn't realize it was 2 hours and 30 minutes. You could not convince me that movie was over 90 minutes because it went by so quickly. You could not.
Yeah, it did. It went by fast.
And there were these moments like that opening scene again. We won't talk about it, but you know, we're in a packed, you know, press and fan, you know, and like that first scene right before the title sequence pops up, the whole audience just like gasped and like shrieked a little bit. And I said, oh, we are in for a treat.
Yeah.
In for a treat. And the way that they do certain things, like I have never been terrified watching somebody drink water as I did in this film. Like the,
I know. Like the way, that's what I mean. Like the performance, performance is so strong that she makes water feeling like anxious. It's just like every time she drinks, it's such a simple it's such a simple thing to put into her character, even though there's a little bit of like product placement there.
Yes,
but it's so well done. I mean, like every time she drank that water, I just wanted to give her a hug. I really did. I'm like, I'm so sorry for you. You know,
Vic, to give you a little bit of background in the film, this isn't really spoiling anything, but anytime she's feeling anxious, her therapist told her to drink a bottle of water. So she always pulls out it has to be Voss, because clearly Voss paid a lot of money to be in this film.
So but I guess it's like a very popular brand of water in this.
Yes. It's like in a glass bottle. It's very fancy, you know. And so like she's drinking these glass bottles of water, and like as the film's going on, she's like downing more and more water because she's like, she doesn't know what's going on. And there's always just this like she rips it open, and like as she's getting more desperate with this water, and you're just like watching like, honey, it's gonna be okay, but it's not, because like, and so you actually just watch her, and you're like kind of having like a little bit of a panic attack with her every time she rips open this bottle of water to drink it.
And she drinks it in one go. Like it's not like drinks it in one go. Like three chugs it all down. Wow. It's a great performance.
And it's like, seriously, it's not even just like that, you know, like you can hold a cup and you can kind of chug it. She's like tipping this bottle completely back, like head back. The bottle is like vertical, you know, like perpendicular to the floor. Like it's just, it's absolutely wild. And I thought, wow, I've never felt so much like anxiety watching somebody take a drink of water.
Yeah, no. Great performance though. Very good performance. I saw somebody talk about it. I don't know what you think, that it might be award consideration just because of all the nuances. And I somewhat agree because it feels very Britney Spears inspired, the performance, you know?
And, absolutely.
It's so good. I love Smile too. I really do. So yeah,
top tier film, and it's the perfect. It came out at the perfect time. Like it's still in theaters. Everybody go see it. Vic, I'm just gonna throw it back to you now because I got to piggyback off of Johnny. Made my life a lot very easy for that. So, what's our next choice?
Okay, I have a question for you. Do you guys want Nicolas Cage again, or should I pick something else?
Listen, give me what your heart desires. If you desire Nicolas Cage, give me the Cage.
Yeah, but are we doing 3 movies or 5?
We're probably going to get to four now. I think we'll probably hit four, but...
Okay, so I'm going to leave Nicolas Cage as the fourth. And I'm going to go straight to another star, Mr. Russell Crowe. In the movie Exorcism.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
I have not. That's the one where he's the priest, right?
No, it was the Pope's Exorcist. And the Exorcism is about... He's playing a retired actor who gets casted in a movie after his friend, who was playing the main role, dies on the set.
Oh. I did not... No, I have not heard of this film.
Okay, it came out recently in Poland, and I think it wasn't well received by people.
Okay,
but I liked it. And I think that it may be one of the better roles of Russell Crowe in recent years.
Okay.
So, yeah. But long story short, basically from the beginning, when he appears, he acts like crazy, like he's possessed, and every bad stuff that can happen happens. And when he's casted in the main role, because his friend died, he gets to work with his daughter again, and they don't have a best relationship in the world. Like,
Okay.
it's not the greatest daughter and the greatest father are working again. Yay, we're happy, the rainbows are appearing. No. Basically, it's like we work together. Okay, yeah. And later in the movie, we find out that he was sexually abused as a child, and that his harsh relationship with a daughter is not only the reason why he drinks, but he gets all those flashbacks from the past where when he was abused, when his wife died, and basically that's the whole core of the problems of this character that Crow plays. And I don't know if it's a very psychological movie, but it really gets deep in the idea of loss, of working out your problems, fixing your relationship with your close ones.
I was gonna say, he sounds like a very complicated character.
Yeah, he's a very complicated character, and in the end, surprise, surprise, he indeed is possessed.
Oh,
And
shocker.
shocker, yeah. And they try to perform an exorcism on set while he's acting, because they
Okay.
believe that he wouldn't go to see a priest or whatever willingly. So they just have to say, "Hey, come on set, we're gonna record something," and he just perform an exorcism. And well, people are set on fire. People die.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but in the end, let's say there's a happy ending. Yeah,
Okay.
let's say there's a happy ending, and everything gets better with time.
Is it like it th that the premise that you just described sounds comical? Is it supposed to be comical, or is it supposed to be like a very serious movie?
I mean, it's a serious movie, but if you treat it as a okay, if you focus too much, then you'll make it a fun. It will be funny, but if you overthink things, then this movie will lose a lot of potential, a lot of quality. But in the end, when I was watching it, it was too serious because I was focusing more of a. On Russell Crowe's character, on his problems, on the whole idea of working out your problems, of fixing your relationships, than the stuff around. So I was focusing more of a on an idea of what this movie is meant to be rather than what it could have been.
Okay. John, have you seen this?
No, I have not. I have not seen it. I know of it. I will. This is the one with Russell Crowe, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No. I saw the trailer and I was mixed. I was like, I didn't really know if it would be
Sure.
good, and so I was waiting to hear more. But I love Russell Crowe. He's great in everything. So, but no, I have not watched it yet.
Okay. Sounds like we have something to add to our lists.
Yes,
Oh.
yes.
All right, John, give me your third project.
Well, since we're gonna go in four, I'm gonna rush and put another obscure title into our recommendations. My
Okay.
next recommendation is called Mads. MADS, Mads.
Okay.
This premiered at Fantastic Fest. I did not get to watch it, but I got to watch it when I got back home. that came on Shudder after.
Okay.
Guys, this is a crazy film. Crazy film.
I've never even heard of it.
Well, now you're hearing about it, and I'm telling you, it is crazy. Very good. Okay, so it is a French film, and it is all done on one continuous take.
No way.
It is does not stop. I'm sure there is like connected cuts to make it look that way, but there are sequences that boggle the mind how they pulled off. Because okay. It just doesn't stop. It just keeps going and going. Okay, so what the premise has to do with the guy. You know, it's like a normal party weekend. And he's driving back to his house. And some girl, like he encounters a girl that is bandaged up, is acting very manic. She's crying. She's freaking out. And then all of a sudden, you know, she attacks him and bangs her head violently on the dashboard, does a lot of crazy things. And long story made short, he starts feeling strange. And you're kind of going along with him through this night for a while as things begin to get different for him. You're kind of on his perspective. And yeah, it's almost like Patient Zero, the movie, right? But
okay. But
you're along for the ride as he like starts going different and giving it to other people and other people changing around him and then the world going nuts and things getting more chaotic. And then, like, it just escalates and escalates. And it's, guys, it is very cool. It is a very cool film. It is very difficult. It's very difficult to make these one-take style films. But there are sequences that just, between the cinematography, the acting is actually very good too. Like when people start going different, the little mannerisms that they do, it's not like the typical it is a zombie film, but like it's not the typical zombie change. It's almost as if they still have their personality, but they just start acting like very nuts, like mad.
Okay.
They start acting mad, almost as if they've been taken over by the Joker. You know.
Okay. We're not talking like Walking Dead zombies here.
No, we're not. We are not. It is very different, and I deeply enjoyed it. That's my number 30, Mads. Mads, I cannot recommend it enough.
I have the Rotten Tomatoes pulled up. We're talking like critics gave it a 90%, and like not that I ever really care about what the Rotten Tomatoes scores say, but audiences also give it an 81. Like this, like people are just loving this.
It is a banger. I'm telling you, it is an absolute banger. If I can recommend anything, go see this no matter what.
Okay. I'm actually going to switch it up for my next choice. I picked a book. Don't Eat the Pie by Monique Asher. This was one that I reviewed for the site. I happen to know the author. And I've known her for years prior to even her writing a novel, and she wrote this novel. And let me tell you, if I've never read a book where I've felt like so claustrophobic, but like in like a way that you're supposed to be. So this book takes place on an island, Camilla Island, and a daughter and a wife and a mom who just recently got married have to go back to this island, help take care of her new husband's mother, and things just start going really odd. And it feels very like, you know, there's something wrong with these people, but you can't quite put your finger on it until the very end. And you're like, you're just turning the pages, trying to get through these chapters as things just continue to go wrong. And you start to feel so claustrophobic is the right word. Like there's a hurricane or like a storm coming that's like giving you this ticking time bomb. And, you know, the mom is going through her own journey of just like having to be the perfect wife. But there's things that are complicating that, especially when she becomes pregnant. And I just could not get enough of this book. I could not praise it. The author has another book coming out next year, and I'm so excited for that. But so if anybody's looking for a good horror novel, Don't Eat the Pie is one of the best that I've read so far this year. And I read a lot of books, and I read a lot of horror books. You can't go wrong with this. I don't know. Do you guys like feeling like slightly claustrophobic when you have like a horror project? Sometimes I feel like John, I feel like Smile gave that a little bit. You know what I mean? Where you just felt like you were like the world was closing in a little bit.
One of my favorite stories is I Am Legend. I don't know if you ever read that book.
I haven't.
So it is like all done, like it's all inside a house for like 80% of the novel. And so yeah, if done right, it can be a great read. Yeah, you know, like it's all done from within a home. He's trying to solve the pandemic from inside his home through like 80% of it while these vampires are trying to turn him out of the house. I love claustrophobic film stories.
You can't go wrong. Sorry, go ahead, Vic.
Yeah, whenever I think about claustrophobic horrors, I immediately think of Cube.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah, Cube is good.
Yeah.
What makes that claustrophobic?
Bro, you're closed in a room, and if you get to another room, it's still the same, but you don't know if you're going to die or live in there. And it's, you know, yeah.
So Brian, the way they made that movie is it was an independent film, right? So okay. they did the film in one room the entire movie. They would just repaint the room for every scene. So anytime that they would like solve the puzzle for in one space, they would just like redo that box and then just like, make it look different for every scene.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty clever.
Yeah. I've never heard of this film, and it's been out for almost 20 years.
You have to watch it. It has like 3 more sequels, so it's like Cube 1, Cube 2, Cube 3, and Cube 4.
The first one's the only one that matters. I'm just going to
say Yeah, especially to me because it was co-directed by a Polish director, so.
Say no more.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a really claustrophobic movie. Films and claustrophobic, you know, books, I think that they add that natural horror-esque feel to something, you know, like when you just feel like the world's closing in, you just feel very off. So it adds an extra layer to it. So yeah, third pick, Don't Eat the Pie by Monique Asher. And it's in bookstores. So if you need a book for horror, go get it, people.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a book that Dean Winchester will definitely not read.
He would not read it.
Yeah.
He always eats the pie.
Yeah.
All right. This might be our final round. So make it good and make it count, Vic. Give it to me.
Okay. So before we go to honorable mentions.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Finishing off with Nicolas Cage, the movie called Arcadian.
Okay. I don't know if I've heard this one either.
Okay. So it's a movie set in a post-apocalyptic future after the pandemic. Some kind of pandemic killed a lot of people. And basically, there are monsters who are photophobic around there, so they only try to kill people at night.
Okay.
And the movie starts off with Nicolas Cage's character called Paul, who goes through desolated city and finds two baby newborn boys who were abandoned. I
Okay.
think they're, if I remember correctly, their names were Joseph and Thomas. And we just cut and we go 15 years into the future or so, and we see them already grown up and helping Paul. And it's basically like a mix of A Quiet Place, Knowing, The Walking Dead, or The Last of Us, with slight motifs from Color Out of Space and some beloved Scandinavian horror movies. So basically, it's a mix of iconic projects mixed with iconic cinematography styles, screenplay styles, and whatever. But it's basically about them trying to live throughout the day, to keep safe, and about Nicolas Cage just trying to raise two teenage boys to be good, to just survive. And it's a very, not only very mature movie, but it also gets you thinking about what's important in life,
Okay.
and just to not do stupid things.
Okay. I like it. Now, do you want to go ahead and give your honorable mentions now, or do you want to wait until after this round?
Maybe we should do them after this round,
Okay,
so we
for
can
sure.
discuss about picks, and then we all go through our
Sure.
honorable mentions and movies we didn't like.
Yep. All right. John, what's number four?
Well, Brian, my number four is called Abigail.
Oh, I forgot about Abigail. It's not even on my list. How could I forget?
Guys, so did I. So
Fucking
did I.
wild.
So did I, but I went back. I was kind of like yesterday going through the timeline, and I was like, oh yeah, Abigail came out this year.
Such a good film. Such a good film.
I did not expect very much from Abigail. I went on like a Tuesday, one of those press showings where you're just like, eh, well, I'll get out of the house, go watch a scary movie. Why not? Why not?
Sure, why not?
Bro, bro, bro. Abigail, as the kids would say, slaps. It absolutely slaps. It kind of reminded me of Scream. And what I mean by that is that it's both terrifying, but also really funny. Like really, really fun. Really funny. Because the entire premise takes place around a girl tormenting bad guys. And
Yes.
that is the funniest idea, to have a little vampire girl just torment bad people. It's so funny. There's one sequence where I can't remember her name, but she pops around the corner and you see this grown man start running and screaming like
Yeah.
very loudly away from her. And it's so good, so good. Abigail is if anybody doesn't know, it involves a group of criminals who get taken to a house in the middle of nowhere. The entire point of their job is they have to sit there overnight and guard a girl for ransom for an entire night. Come to find out, this little girl's not just a standard little girl. She's actually there to be her food. And from there, like, it gets twisty, it gets fun, a little slapsticky, and
Yep.
and the end of it is also pretty wild. And it gets extremely violent. It's from the director, Radio Silence.
Yes.
Who also did Ready or Not. So if that is any indication of how violent it gets, it is a lot of fun. Like, the violence is really fun and funny. And that's my number four.
I was going to say, that it's like literally one of the funniest horror movies, like intentionally so. I enjoyed it so much from start to finish that I had, but I also went into it not having an expectation of it being good.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's added to it.
Yeah, I had no expectation. I was just like, yeah, well, okay, why not? Let's go watch it. Kind of like Smile too. I didn't really have any.
Mm-hmm. I have to be honest with you guys. I just watched it for the cast.
Yeah,
I watched it
it's
for
a great
Dan
cast.
Stevens. Yeah, exactly. I watched it for Dan Stevens. I watched it for Giancarlo, for my boy Matthew Good. Like, you know these actors, but you never see them in one movie together. And the scene in the house.
It's a great cast. They are so fun in it, and and I think it's one of the last roles with what's
Angus
his name?
Cloud. Angus Cloud?
Angus
Cloud.
Euphoria?
Yeah. Angus Cloud, rest in peace. But yeah, he's also very great in this film as well.
I'm so glad you brought that one up because I absolutely forgot that it existed. Absolutely forgot.
And people need to watch it. It's very good. It's so good.
My last pick is actually one that I don't know if a lot of people liked it. So this might be a hot take. But Speak No Evil, which only came out like a month or so ago.
Yes.
First off, all I have to say is James McAvoy can get it. And that's all that movie needs. That's all that movie needs because he's legitimately terrifying in that role. For anybody who doesn't know, this is a family, a mom, a husband, a child. They meet people on a vacation. They're asked to come back to their house. They kind of sort of start to see that these people are not as upfront about the reality of their situation. And James McAvoy's character is a little unhinged. And I was so, like, I'm going to use the word uncomfortable because I can't think of a better word, but like, I was like so like, like my whole body felt like it was on edge the entire film, and it just kept growing and growing and growing to the end. I'm just like, oh my God, like I was so uncomfortable. And I just, the way it ends, the whole audience just like whooped. It was like, yes, that is how you do it, because the mom in that film is a boss bitch and we love her. Have either of you seen this? I'm seeing Vic, you're shaking your head. You've seen this movie.
Yeah, I love it, especially the original from 2 years ago.
Yes.
Because it's a remake of a Danish movie, and I love it so much. And I love the idea that they changed the whole ending.
Okay, I was thinking, I've seen the original, but I saw it 2 years ago. And at first I was like, why are they remaking a movie that just came out 2 years ago? And then I was going to say, the ending felt different. And this was just so completely, it was unhinged in like a good way.
So I've seen both. I've seen the original and the remake, and okay. I think a lot of the problems that I have with the original are fixed a little bit by the remake, only because you also we could talk about spoilers, right?
Yeah, talk about spoilers.
Okay, so
just don't spoil the ending for people.
I'm only going to spoil the ending of the first. The first one, well, I mean, I'm not going to go deep into it, but the first one ends on such a note that made me extremely frustrated by the main characters, because like the main characters do everything that you shouldn't do at the end of it. You're like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Like, and it's kind of made up a little bit by the remake, because the main character is like, I mean, dude, if your kid is in danger or anything like that, you're going to fight a little bit. And I never felt that fight in the first one, you know? And yeah, so that's just my thought. It's a good film, dude. James McAvoy, I mean, he's awesome in everything. So
absolutely. I loved that movie a lot. I cannot praise it enough. People should go and see it. All right. So we're gonna do this quick. We're gonna do this fast. Honorable mentions and horror movies we did not like. Vic, start us off.
With honorable mentions, I hope.
Yep, start with honorable mentions.
Okay, so first thing, Five Nights at Freddy's.
Okay, I still have not seen it.
Yeah, it's okay. It's an okay movie. Because it basically touches on the whole lore of the games, and Matthew Lillard and Josh Hutcherson son are amazing in it. It's like a renaissance of Matthew Lillard again. We need to see him more. So the next one is Alone in the Dark, which is a remake, a remaster of a game from almost 30 years ago.
Okay.
Which stars Paul Mercer, David Harbour, and Jodie Comer as the main characters of the story, which is a really nice horror game. If you have a chance, please play it. It's very, very good.
Okay.
Another honorable mention is a movie called Strange Darling. It's a small horror psychological thriller movie with, it's Willa Fitzgerald, who plays the main role of the lady, who she was in Reacher season one, if people don't recognize her. Yeah, and it's basically about two strangers who meet and try to kill each other, but there's a whole plot twist because the movie starts with act three, goes to act five, goes to act one, act four, act two, and ends with act six. So it's a really good movie and very psychological, good psychological thriller. Also, Speak No Evil, as you mentioned, I had it on my list, in my top list, not in my honorable mentions list, but I really have to mention it because it was a really, really good movie. Of course, Dead Boy Detectives, which I had to remind you of.
You did. I did put it on my list, and that's part of my honorable mentions. So
yeah, and I'm closing my list. Three more projects. Alien Romulus.
Also on my list as honorable mention.
Yeah, I had to watch it because I recently watched the whole Alien saga like 2-3 weeks ago, and I watched Alien Romulus last weekend, and I had to put it on my list because it was a very, very good movie, and I loved it. And two last ones are A Quiet Place Day One, which was a nice prequel.
I liked it. I really did. I liked it.
Yeah, it was a really nice prequel to A Quiet Place, which I really, really love. It wasn't as good as the first Quiet Place, but it was nice enough for me to put it on the list. And the last project is a comic book, Universal Monsters Frankenstein, written by an award-winning writer Michael Walsh and by Tony Murray Griffin, which basically tells a story of Frankenstein who goes out into the world and discovers things and discovers life, but it's brutal.
Real quick, I just want to go back. I actually liked Quiet Place Day One more than the original film.
So I did too. Yeah, I did too.
I liked how it was just so the reason why I liked it was that to me, the psychology was very interesting, because what happens when someone's dying and doesn't care, like that the world is going up in smoke, you know? And I thought that was such an interesting, like, what an interesting way to have a horror film.
My favorite part of it is the fact that it all based around getting pizza. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the entire premise is we need to go get a pizza. That's a brilliant idea for a horror film. Like, just, I must get pizza before I die. That's
exactly
so cool. So cool.
So similar to Zombieland.
Yes.
Yeah, Twinkie's kind of been, I don't know. It's just the emotional reason behind the pizza. I just like, I loved it. I'm going to piggyback off of Vic. And I'm going to say my honorable mention is also Strange Darling. Willa Fitzgerald gives a dynamic performance, and it is incredible, incredible film. And very unpredictable the way it switches up. Like it starts out one way, you think it's going to be one kind of film, and by the end of it, it turns into a completely different film. It is pretty cool. My other honorable mention is Madame Web. That's the scariest movie of the year. thank you. It'll give you nightmares. I haven't slept since it came out.
My PTSD just turned on.
Yeah, so Madame Web, take on. Okay. Oh, God.
You know what's the worst part about it? Is that
she was in the Amazonian jungle focusing on spiders right before she died?
I also was going to make that joke, and I had it written down, and I was just like, I was just like, no, I'm not going to make it. I won't be that person. And then John did it before me.
You're welcome. You're very welcome.
Oh my gosh. That is absolutely terrifying. Yeah, so again, I don't know where to go from here. Alien Romulus is number one of my honorable mentions. It almost made the list. I had a hard time. It was my number five. I thought that was fantastic and how that they did it. It was terrifying in that the monster at the end is just absolutely grotesque. As is Madame Web. No. And then Dead Boy Detectives as well was on my list. I mean, there's just so many good horror films. It was really hard to pin this down.
Yeah, 2024 was a great year for horror. It really was. It honestly might be one of the strongest years in recent memory. And I think it's because they're very cheap to make, and they're very profitable in return. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why you're starting to see a lot of studios go back to that model, and I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I like scary films, so.
And I think with scary films too, I don't necessarily expect a lot, because like I know people didn't like it. I enjoyed Imaginary. Like I just thought it was a fun horror movie to watch. Like it wasn't great, but it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Or like films like Talk to Me, like it's terrifying.
I'm the only person in the world that did not like Talk to Me. I'm the only one.
And this podcast is over. No, I'm just kidding. All right, we have one more thing: the horror movies we did not like. And I'm gonna start this one out real quick because I can tailor myself. I did not like The Watchers. The Dakota Fanning-led film should have been better. There was a better story there. They missed it completely. It was almost completely unwatchable. You were this close, people. You were this close, and I could have written you a better ending. You should have hit me up. That's it. That's the only one I got.
Mine is anything but Blumhouse this year.
Oh, okay.
I mean, like, Blumhouse is at a very off here. Like it feels like they're going through the motions and not really trying. Like they're not really trying like they used to. Like, you know, I could walk back in 2015 and 2016 or 2012. They had like the Insidious franchise. They had Get Out. They had a lot of good films, but now it just seems like they're just kind of like in an assembly mind. Like on an assembly line model right now, where they're just flipping movies out that just they're gonna make a profit no matter what, and they just don't really care.
Take that back about Speak No Evil. That was Blumhouse. I'm just kidding.
Well, that is the exception to the rule. You know, like that's like the majority of Blumhouse this year has not been very well.
Yeah, with Jason Blum, it's like a roulette, or like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're
getting. I mean, like Five Nights at Freddy's, you know, kind of like Vic was saying, like Five Nights at Freddy's was fine. It was fine. That's really the best you could say about it. It was fine.
Sure. And like looking at the films that you're right, Night Swim didn't do well. Afraid didn't do well.
No.
Imaginary didn't do well, even though I did like that one. I totally missed House of Spoils. I didn't even know that was one that they did.
Yeah, House of Spoils. And then like, yeah, it's been a very off year for them.
Which is crazy because they have so many good, like they had like The Black Phone, which is only 2 years ago, is probably one of my favorite horror films.
It's great.
The sequel releases next year.
Yeah. The Black Phone is a great film. It's very good.
All right, Vic. What's your
dislikes? I have two. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey 2. Which is
you didn't like the sequel.
It's a fucking disaster. I don't know what else can I tell about it. The first one was awful. This one is awful too.
Was that a sequel joke there? Awful too?
Maybe. Let's say it was.
I'm going to need Lizzie to make that a soundbite of you just saying it was fucking awful, because I'm just going to start playing that all the time now.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Just not to talk more about Winnie the Pooh. I know some people will be mad at me for this, but sorry, Tim Burton. Beetlejuice.
Interesting. You didn't like it.
Nope. Completely. Not my.
I mean, I can see why. I mean, I can totally see it.
I like the first one, but this one really threw me out of the window, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Like, especially the scene with the baby beetle, just like, come on.
I'm going to say this, which is interesting, is that I don't like the first Beetlejuice, and I liked this one. So it's interesting that we had different...
Yeah, that's very interesting.
You know, I like the first one because it's a classic Tim Burton that you know, where he mixed... I know Beetlejuice came before the Batman, but it was the perfect mix of, you know, of the comedic Keaton and the one that tries to act very serious, but he's more comedic evil guy. And this Beetlejuice feels like, I don't know how to say it. It feels like a movie that's meant to be a legacy sequel, but it, for me at least, it really doesn't get close to it. Like it's a movie that was made just because it was made, and
they're definitely trying to cash in on the nostalgic. I think like a lot of we see it so often now, the nostalgia sells, and that's what they were banking on.
Yeah, I mean, it would sell for me if I was born when it came out, or at least if I watched it when I was a child. But I watched Beetlejuice, like, I don't know, right before the movie came out. So, I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I get that. I also think it's interesting is that I went into it expecting it to be more like, because I hadn't seen Beetlejuice in years, but I've seen the musical version of Beetlejuice, which leans a little more into the comedy, especially the bisexuality of Beetlejuice. And so I think that this one almost felt like a good continuation of that, and not the original movie. So like maybe that's also why I love it. But who knows?
Can I bring up one more thing real quick?
For sure.
So it feels like kind of a just, you know, this is a terrifier year right now. Like we're in the terrifier like run renaissance. So I wanted to say that I binged those movies before Fantastic Fest, and no. No. That's all I'm gonna say before we log off. I didn't like those movies either. I get the appeal, very good visual effects, but guys, there's like sequences in these films that I will never get it out of my head. I will never get it out of my head. Like it, very brutal. I guess kind of was brutal to a fault. I think.
Let's hope next year will be great in horror movies, because you know, I just have to mention it, because we have Until Dawn, which is a live action adaptation of the game. We have mm-hmm. another Saw movie. We have The Monkey. We have Five Nights at Freddy's 2. We have another Predator movie. What the hell? We have the ending of the Conjuring saga, which will Thank be God. The last installment. We have Megan 2.0.
I'm excited for Megan 2.0. I like Megan.
Yeah, we have Screamboat, which is like a horror Mickey Mouse movie, yep. I believe. we have The Bride, which is The Bride of Frankenstein. We have Final Destination, Wolfman, Black Phone 2, 28 years later.
I know, dude. Well, 28 years later in Final Destination, the reboot, I am so excited for both of those. I'm very excited for both of those films.
Especially that Cillian Murphy is back in 28 years later.
Like, is he? He's back!
I've never seen one of those films.
And he's so good. So good. It's directed by Danny Boyle. An Oscar like caliber director. Like, it's, if you ever want to see an Oscar caliber director direct like a really good zombie film, 28 days later.
Yeah,
28 weeks later is not bad either. They're both pretty good.
Yeah. So in the cast, we have Aaron Taylor Johnson, Jodie Comer, Ralph Fiennes. Like,
yeah,
it's gonna be good.
Yeah, it started as a niche movie, and it's one of the most awaiting movies of next year.
And hopefully we get Madam Web too. You know, so.
Not just that, we're getting the expanded universe of Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. I think Bambi comes out next year.
Yeah, Peter Pan,
Tinkerbell. Yeah, we're in for a treat. I know Vic's gonna be lining up out the door for those.
Yeah, especially that I think that Peter Pan movie is about the pedophiles. So.
And on that note, we are running out of time, but we'd love to continue the conversation. So check us out at thecosmiccircus.com, or you can find us on Twitter and other social medias at My Cosmic Circus, or our Cosmic Circus podcast Twitter at Cosmic Podcasts. Thank you again for tuning into the Cosmic Circle. I'm Brian Kitson, and you can find me on Twitter at Kitson301. John, Vic, thank you so much for joining me. Before we go, where can the people find you?
I can be found on Twitter at John Movie Watch.
You can find me at Twitter at EricXalki, and I wish you happy Halloween, and I hope the Winnie the Pooh universe ends faster than it started.
Thanks again, everyone. Can't wait for our next trip through the cosmos.